Kirk Ludeke back at you with another Scouting Post podcast, continuing my series on the Boston Bruins 2016-17 preview. I began last week with the centers, Boston's greatest position of strength, in my opinion, and I suspect the opinion of many others. Now I'm continuing with right wingers. Before I get into that, just want to thank you all for listening. And boy, I had a good couple days up in Omaha, Nebraska, covering the USHL Fall Classic. Certainly some good hockey talent there. Some of the best draft eligibles for 2017 were in attendance. One guy who really stood out for his pro attributes and mature game was Shane Bowers. He's a Maritimer, originally from Halifax, was drafted fourth overall in the 2015 Quebec Major Junior Hockey League draft and opted not to sign with Cape Breton. He instead played with the Waterloo Blackhawks at the USHL last season and is back for a second year. I expect some pretty significant uptick in point production. He was solid last season as a 16-year-old. I think he's going to take that next step now that he's adjusted to a full season. I think more than a point per game would not be out of the question. He was just really effective in all zones, just a really smart, creative, high hockey IQ, two-way player. Grew up rooting for first the Senators, he told me, and then the Chicago Blackhawks, and not surprisingly, his favorite player is Jonathan Toews. You don't want to compare him to a Jonathan Toews, but he certainly patterns his game after him, plays that effective two-way style and jumps on pucks and can put them in the back of the net in the blink of an eye. So I was pretty impressed with Shane Bowers. I think he's certainly a first-round pick, and the question is, will he work his way into the top 10? And based on what I saw in Omaha from him, certainly a possibility. So there's your 2017 draft teaser. Not going to go into too much more detail because the bottom line is I've got to save that stuff for a Redline report. But what I will do is continue my Boston Bruins 2016-17 season preview position by position. As I said, I started with the centers. If you haven't heard that podcast or visited that post, I encourage you to go to scoutingpost.com. If you're here listening to this podcast, you've probably heard the centers. I will continue this series with left wingers next. And then I'm going to go to the goaltenders, and then after that I'll finish out with Boston's greatest position of need and the biggest question mark entering the season. I don't think too many people would dispute that, the defense. So I will save them for last, definitely not saving the best for last in this case. But in fairness to the Bruins and Sweeney, it's the defense they have right now. I do believe the GM is working on trying to figure out an upgrade of some sort. But where that will lead him, we don't know. It is easier said than done in terms of acquiring top-notch two-way defensemen, especially younger guys who are retainable and relatively cost-controlled in this day and age. You're going to pay through the nose for those kinds of players. And the bottom line is teams are just not eager to give them up because they don't have, in many cases, they don't have a surplus of those players to begin with. So you've got high demand and not a lot of supply. And that, of course, creates high trade askers. And then Don Sweeney has to think of the future. And, you know, the future is potentially bright with some of the recent draft picks. But we'll get into that for now. We're going into right wings, which is another reasonable position for the Bruins. It's probably not as strong on the right as they are on the left. I will progress with the left side guys, and certainly, you know, no Boston Bruins forward discussion is complete without Brad Marchand, who is the undisputed top left winger and has made magic and chemistry with Patrice Bergeron to the tune of 37 goals last year. But we're talking about the right side. And, you know, who is going to be your top two line right wingers? And that is certainly an intriguing question because the Bruins signed David Backes on July 1st. He was the team's signature big name free agent acquisition. I talked about him in my center preview because, well, he's been a career centerman for the Blues. But what if the Bruins are planning on using him at right wing? I think right wing and center are both options for Backes. Obviously, he spent most of his career at center. Yeah, he's a big, skilled guy who excels at that position. But it's not outside the realm of possibility that he could be your top line right wing playing with Bergeron and Marchand. That would certainly be stacking the eggs in the proverbial one basket there in terms of how forwards go. But think of the potential for a Backes-Bergeron-Marchand line. What Backes gives you is just real big-bodied, experienced player who can put the puck in the net and has just a very intense leadership style and is an effective three-zone player. Certainly, there are some concerns and questions about being 32, but I go back to his very first interview when he did the conference call with media, and after about the third question he fielded about his age and the fact that by signing a five-year deal he would be 37 at the end, I remember David Backes distinctly saying, "Hey guys, I'm 32, not 52." And, he really believes he's got the legs and he doesn't have the mileage on the body to break down. That remains to be seen. We'll have to see how the David Backes era turns out in Boston. But I would not be surprised to see him in the mix as a right wing because it's hard to imagine the Bruins paying $6 million a year for an individual to be the third line center. Not impossible, mind you, but I just think they're going to seek better bang for the buck. And as a matchup play, the good thing about Backes is they can move him around. He can play center. He can play right wing. And I just see Claude Julien maybe leveraging that. But if I had to guess, if David Krejci is not ready to go physically to start the year, I mean, as I said in the previous podcast on the centers, it's a no-brainer. Backes and Bergeron are your one and two centers. And then the Bruins will fill in around those two. However, if Krejci, and Krejci's an intense, driven kind of guy, so don't be surprised if he is, in fact, has a clean bill of health and is ready to go to start the year. But if Krejci is good to go and you're talking Bergeron, Krejci, Bergeron in terms of your top two, I personally think Bergeron is your number one center and Marchand is his winger. He's your top goal scorer. So that's your number one line. Some might say they're interchangeable, but I think after last season, clearly the Bergeron-Marchand duo with Louis Erickson for much of the year emerged as your top line. So that's your number one unit, Krejci and potentially Frankie Vetrano, and then David Pastrnak, who the Bruins seem to want to keep with his childhood idol Krejci, are your second line. So that means David Backes very well could be your number one right wing. So that's what I'm going with, and I think Backes certainly could fit there and do some good things, especially with his size and his ability to go to the net. Establish a net front presence, fight off the defenders. I mean, defenders are going to have their hands full with him. And then certainly when you've got a highly effective and creative playmaker in Bergeron, and then a speedy, abrasive, agitating pure shooter like Marchand, who can really disrupt the defense and fight through the layers in the defense. I think that could be a nice option for the Bruins. But we will see. We're not going to figure it out on September 12th, that is for sure. I talked about him earlier, your second-line right wing in all likelihood is David Pastrnak. It's a big year for him. He's going into the third of his year of his entry-level deal. He was, as you will recall, was a surprise splash as a rookie pro. He began the year in Providence and got a December call-up for the first time, played pretty well, then was returned to Providence. But by January, was summoned again due to injuries and really took off, had a couple of eye-opening games, two-goal games, and just really electrified the TD Garden and fired up the fan base. And Peter Chiarelli realized he had a young star in the making, and so the Bruins opted to keep him up for the rest of the year, burn that first year of the ELC. Last year took a step back, was injured right around Halloween, took a shot off the foot. There was a lot. I remember I was told by a pretty good source that he had a fractured foot. And although then when the word came out, it was a bone bruise. But, I mean, ultimately it was a fractured foot. It ended up taking a long time to heal. And by the time he worked himself back in the lineup, he really wasn't all that effective. Took him a while to get going, and he never really got out of second gear. He finished the season, did play 51 out of 82 games, but only scored 15 goals and 26 points, which, you know, for him was a disappointment. I wouldn't call it a wasted year in development, but he certainly didn't take that next step forward as anticipated. So this is a big year for Pasternak because effective next season, he'll be a restricted free agent, and there's already talk and rumor of a potential offer sheet shaping up from another club. Not going to get into that. I don't want to scare people or speculate. Just I have seen that kind of floated out there on the internet and Twitter and other various places, and it's something that the Bruins have to be prepared for. And that's why Don Sweeney has to be careful about committing, you know, oodles of money to older veteran types that might not have, even if you do retain them long term, they've got potential diminishing returns working against them, whereas a kid like David Pasternak, who made the NHL at 18 and is only going to be 21 at the end of this season, I mean, you want to be very careful about, how you proceed and making sure you earmark enough money to get him under contract for his second deal and keep him in the Bruins organization. It would be almost inconceivable for me if the Bruins would trade him unless you're just getting a no-brainer young defenseman back that, you know, where you have to swallow hard and say, well, we're giving up a tremendous player up front, but we're getting a potential cornerstone back. And I just don't see another team giving that kind of player up for a David Pasternak. I mean, I'm not saying it's impossible, but I think Pasternak has far more value to the Bruins than another team would be willing to give up assets for. So I just see him as a future cog in this, or a future core player, not a cog, not a role player, but a key core foundational guy. He could potentially be the heir apparent to Patrice Bergeron, and that would be pretty special if he could become three quarters the player Patrice Bergeron is. The Bruins will have a very successful and respected and loved player on the right side for years to come. Going back to 2014 in his draft year, it seems just crazy that he was able to be plucked with the 25th overall pick. And I get these questions from time to time on Twitter, how did that happen? Why did it happen? It's one of those things. It was probably a perfect storm for the Bruins, whereby Pasternak was very highly thought of going into the season, started well in Sweden, but he suffered a concussion in January, and that's critical season time of the season when scouts are really formulating positions. They've just had their mid-season meetings, or they're having their mid-season meetings, and they're really formulating their lists and really drilling down into the players that they're identifying as potential selections for the June draft, which at that point is about a little over 6 months away. He goes down. He misses several months of action where he's not playing at all. Meanwhile, other players are doing well. They're performing. Scouts are seeing them. And it's kind of one of those out of sight, out of mind things. He does come back in April. He played in the World Under-18 Championship that year, but he was not himself. He didn't have his timing down, didn't look very good. So it was kind of a double whammy. He missed the time and then didn't look that great. And in Philly, he slides down. I remember being told some rumors that the Bruins were looking at trading up to try to get Pasternak. That's how badly they wanted him, and they were unable to pull off any kind of deal. And they had kind of resigned themselves that they weren't going to get their player. So imagine the euphoria at the table when, as each pick was coming off the board and they were getting closer and closer to 25, just resisting the urge to make a rash decision and give up assets, but just holding tight, holding steady. As my opening song, by the way, Steady As She Goes, which is one of the reasons I picked it, by the Ranketeers. Just Steady As She Goes, hung with it, and when 25 rolled around, they did not take much time to make that pick. That's kind of how it goes in hockey. Sometimes you kind of luck out and you fall into players and I'm not going to say the Bruins fell into Pasternak, because they certainly really identified him as a major player. I didn't even preview him for Boston that year because I just didn't think he was going to be there at 25. It wasn't I didn't like him. This is one of those things where sometimes you outsmart yourself. I should have just put him down, but did not in any way, shape, form feel like he was going to be there for them. And know, surprise, surprise. So good for the Bruins. And I think Pasternak working with Krejci this year will if he can stay healthy, and that's a big if because he's still relatively slight. I know he's working on improving his core strength and adding a little mass to his relatively slight frame. But, I mean, being healthy is the key. If he can play a full season, it's not out of the realm of possibility to see 20, 25, maybe even 30 goals. And, you know, that would be very interesting. Well, we've covered Backes and Pasternak, and now we'll talk about certainly a polarizing figure for the Bruins, and that is Jimmy Hayes. And Jimmy Hayes has so many good tools. It's hard to argue with his 6'5" size. When he's on his game, he can be a load to handle for opposing defenses. Really, posts up in front of the net, gets his stick on loose pucks, and can score from in tight and close. Has a pretty good intermediate shot from the high slot. And this is a player that the year before the Bruins brought him in via trade for Riley Smith. You know, it scored 19 goals and just more was expected of him. And unfortunately, being a kid, you know, from Boston and expectations and all that, it didn't really come together for him. And it's unfortunate because consistency is everything. And that's, we forget sometimes that the game is played by humans, and whatever was going on in Jimmy Hayes' his life last year and during the season, it seemed to snowball where, you know, a high point of his season was a hat trick against the Ottawa Senators. But from there, things kind of spiraled down, and he became less and less effective. Just didn't really provide much of a consistent presence. Finished the year with 13 goals in 75 games, was scratched out of the lineup for several of those games. And just really his shooting percentage cratered. He did finish with a 10.2 shooting percentage, but if you compare his first half splits to his second half, it was a pretty profound dip that pulled it down. And he's really got to get it together. Sure, there are a lot of pressures of playing at home, and there are a lot of external distractors. It's certainly not fun to hear your name mentioned in negative circles on the talk radio, and because of the expectations, he was a magnet for criticism. But some of the things that Hayes has to own is up and down effort and intensity levels, and just the overall inconsistency. Even early on, he had a big game against Colorado Avalanche on the road in Boston's first win of the season, and but prior to that, he had done really not anything of note in those games leading up to it. And then he exploded, and just like that, he was like a point-per-game player. So if you looked at the stats, you would think, Hayes is a pretty decent, is having a reasonable season. The reality was it was feast or famine. He's either filling the net and putting up some big games point-wise, or he's doing nothing. And so he's got to own that, and he's really got to come in and have – hit the ground running at camp and really have a good camp in preseason and try to salvage, what was, I'm sure, a monumentally disappointing season for him, as a Boston guy and someone who I'm sure, wanted to play well and had dreamed of playing for the Bruins. Not going to talk about the VZ Hayes rumors and that he may or may not have, had input into that. That's not my place. That stuff is background noise as far as I'm concerned. He addressed it. He said it didn't happen. He didn't talk Jimmy Vesey out of signing in Boston. And look, everyone's different. And what I would offer you is if we're honestly going to say that that the words of a Boston guy playing on the Bruins and being unhappy at the criticism he was getting was going to be enough to sway Vesey away from signing with Boston, then, there's a very good chance that the team is probably better off without that person. I would offer to you that it was far more complex than that and different. And so if you're looking to blame Jimmy Hayes for the fact that he didn't land or he didn't do his part to recruit Jim Vesey to the Bruins, it's probably, we're barking up the wrong tree. There are a lot of things to be unhappy at Jimmy Hayes about going back to last season. That shouldn't really be one of them. So I'll leave it at that. But this is an important year. It'll be hard for Hayes to be producing on the fourth line. I think, best case for him is he's a third liner and he can get a little more ice time, and maybe depending on who his line mates are, he can come through with a little more consistent play and production. But he's got to get heavier on the puck. He's got to get harder. He's got to find an element of grit. He's never going to be a big, mashing, intimidating, you know, kind of power forward. That's just not him. Would be great if he could pick up a step and get a little quicker, but that's probably a bridge too far at this stage. And ultimately, for Jimmy Hayes, he's just got to maybe stop gripping the stick so tight, relax, maybe remind himself why the game was so fun for him when he was younger, and maybe channel some of those dreams and desires he had as a kid, imagining himself in the Spoke B, and find a way to channel some positive energy, because right now everyone's just kind of piling on him, and it's unfortunate. I don't think he's a bad guy, and I don't think, you know, it's that he doesn't care. He's human. And, you know, in an ideal world, he would have come in, set the world on fire, and would have been a fan favorite and all that. I think it's just he's become a little too convenient of a scapegoat and a whipping boy. But he also has to own that he didn't play well enough, and he's got to improve it. And I think there's a good chance he will. And if not, well, I don't think he'll be around long to ponder what went wrong. The Bruins will have to move on. And unfortunately for them, he signed for this year and next year, so if he doesn't at least produce something for them, they'll be taking cents on the dollar to move him off to someone else. Riley Nash was another of the free agent signings that happened on the first day, July 1st. He's an experienced, grinding kind of wing coming out of Carolina. Scored 9 goals and 22 points in 64 games last year. He was a former first-round pick of the Edmonton Oilers in 07. So at one point, you know, bigger things were expected of Nash. It's never really blossomed for him. But, you know, he is what he is. He's a solid bottom-line, two-way, grinding kind of wing who's going to, you know, he's going to play with energy, and he's going to play with some smarts, and he's going to, impact the game physically, and you know, I guess fans, the cynical fans that are unhappy with the coaching and the situation in Boston would say he's a Claude Binky. Very good chance that could be the case. But ultimately, you know, he's heavy on the puck. He's a willing and able player. You know, he's not overly physical. He only had 18 penalty minutes, but he plays hard, and he plays clean. He plays the game the right way, and that's, you know, the Bruins have time for that. So those are kind of your on paper players. Let's talk about a few that might find a way to work their way into the mix. At the top of my list on right wing is Danton Heinen. He's probably the most intriguing of the Boston rookies coming in. This was the fourth round pick in 2014, surprise player out of the Langley Hornets of the British Columbia Tier 2 Junior League, went to DU for 2 seasons. I met up with Denver University assistant coach David Carl in Omaha, and I asked him about Danton Heinen. And the reason I asked him about him was because Danton had told me himself during an interview I did with him last season that Carl was the one who was probably most responsible for getting him to Denver. He had done the bulk of the recruiting, and just he really appreciated the effort that Coach Carl, who's defenseman Matt Carl's brother, by the way, he really appreciated the effort that Coach Carl had put into recruiting him and showing an interest in him. And so I figured, hey, there's no better person to talk to about Heinen than Dave Carl. So one of the things he said was that when Heinen arrived, he was such a humble guy, he didn't realize really how good he was. And so he said after every practice, Heinen would always stay behind to work on his shot and work on his skills, because he had been playing center in junior, and then the team shifted him to the wing, and he played left wing as a freshman. And Carl said that the two of them spent a lot of time on the ice together, and they would be working on passing and shooting and some of the things, because Heinen recognized that as a winger, he had to, you know, he had to be a little better goal scorer than he was used to being when he had been playing center and he was more of a setup man. So Carl alluded to his humility and his intelligence and understanding that there were certain skills that he needed to address in his game in order to take the next step. And so he's pretty effusive in the praise. I definitely got the feeling that Coach Carl was sorry to see him go after just 2 years. Obviously, you know, these college programs would love to have these players around longer. Heinen would have been looking an even bigger offensive year as a junior with two seasons under his belt, but it was time for Heinen to go and he signed. Now, what does this mean for Boston? Well, he's a year older because he had been previously passed over before the Boston Bruins picked him up in the draft. So he's a little more mature. We're talking about a 21-year-old who, you know, physically has added mass to his frame. He's not a big guy. You know, but he's not small either. He's not a blazing fast guy, but he's not slow. Just a really intelligent, creative, sharp, playmaking wing. He's versatile. Bruins could try him at center. He played right wing all last year on the Pacific Rim line with Trevor Moore and Dylan Gambrell, and they were one of the most effective units in hockey once they were put together around midseason by Jim Montgomery, who's the Denver University coach and head coach. And I just think Heinen is one of these guys that's going to come in. He's going to surprise a lot of people. He would give the Bruins certainly a change of pace. I think he's got a higher upside than in Jimmy Hayes, even though he has nowhere near Hayes's natural physical attributes. He's obviously a more skilled player. He's going to give you a higher offensive ceiling. But the Bruins might decide, hey, you know, Heinen can go down to the minors without being waived. Hayes can't. And the economics might dictate that Heinen goes down to Providence. We'll see. I think even if he starts the season in Providence, you will see Heinen in Boston at some point. He's just too good of a player. And I would not at all have a problem with him breaking camp with the team as a third or even a fourth line winger for the Bruins, because he's so intelligent and versatile and able to do different things. But I don't know if that'll be the case. The Boston might decide that it's in his best interest to get a top line or a second line and power play and penalty killing experience in Providence. And if they do that, that's okay. You know, fans want their shiny new toys, but the reality is sometimes these players just need time to develop, and there's no reason to rush them into the lineup. If he outperforms Hayes and Nash by a wide margin, then maybe he earns a shot and breaks camp with the NHL. That wouldn't surprise me in the least, but don't count on it. Other guys vying for positions this year that I think could see some time, assuming they aren't moved, are Seth Griffith, who I want to like the player. I really respect his hockey sense and his hands and his ability to make things happen around the net. I mean, he was a standout lacrosse player coming out of his younger years in Ontario before he dedicated himself to hockey full time. Came out of the London Knights, which is one of the top producers of NHL talent across the league. Playing for the Hunters, just a really smart hockey player who knows what it takes. Working against him is his size. I mean, he's only about 5'9", under 200 pounds, and he's not a dynamic skater. He doesn't have breakaway speed. He's more quick than fast, but I just think that hurts him in terms of, you know, what do you do with him? Where do you play him? You know, he's probably not skilled enough to be in your top two lines. Although, if David Backes plays third line center, maybe Seth Griffith is your second line guy. I don't know. Maybe they try him there, but I just don't know that Seth Griffith has it to be a impact NHL player. Because if he's not playing on your top two lines, where is he playing? Because he doesn't really have that game and that skill set that translates to the bottom six forward spots. But hey, we'll see. I've been wrong many times before, and I could be again. I don't have high hopes that Seth Griffith is going to eventually develop into a 30 goal, 60 point kind of guy. That you would obviously, based on his junior production, we're really hoping for it at some point. I do see him continuing to be a great AHL player. Teams will certainly want him on their club because he is skilled and he will find the back of the net at that level. I'm just not sure he can do it in the NHL. Another player who could see some time on the right side and has kind of become a forgotten factor because of concussion problems this past year is Brian Ferland. Ferland is, he's a fourth round pick in 2011. He was taken with the last choice in that particular round, the year the Bruins won the Stanley Cup. Went off to Cornell for a few years and really played a nice rookie pro season where Coach Bruce Cassidy down in Providence was quite articulate in his praise of Ferland's development. I went out to Providence in December of that year, kind of at mid-season, and to check on the progress. And I remember having an extended conversation with Cassidy about Ferland, and he just really said, "Hey, you know, Ferland has progressed in leaps and bounds," and he went out of his way to talk about how mature and how dedicated Ferland had been in terms of coming in and being pretty raw when training camp started and not really knowing what he was doing, but listening to the coaches and getting down to work and rolling up the sleeves. And it wasn't surprising, therefore, at the end of the season that he was recalled to Boston, played about 5 games, as I recall, had his first NHL point, which was an assist, wore number 68, which, you know, was weird. You keep thinking, you know, expecting, you know, a mullet or something because that was Jágr's number. But Ferland really looked good. And then that year in the playoffs, the AHL playoffs, because as you know, the Bruins weren't able to make it in 2015, he suffered a concussion. And last season, he just never really got on track. I mean, he had an okay camp and preseason, but he got dinged up again early and missed a ton of time. And as a result, is kind of behind in his development now. So he's a long shot to make it. He's one of those players that he's a big-bodied, wide-bodied, wide base track skater, so gets pretty good push. Always kind of had a funky, you know, kind of hunched over stride, but it worked for him. He got up and down the ice pretty quickly. Good shot, good hands around the net. Not a real banger, power forward, intimidating type, but just a big body who can kind of fight his way, drive the net, pick up loose pucks and rebounds and drive them home and do that possession, you know, box out, put his back to the defense, face the boards and protect the puck and cycle it back and forth and maintain possession. That's kind of what Ferland was always good at. And so it'll be interesting to see if he can work his way back in the mix, but he's going to have his hands cut out for him. Peter Mueller. I talked about him in the center preview because Mueller's, you know, had been known as a center. He's listed as a center, but when you go back and you do the research, he's really spent most of his time on the wing. And there's a very good chance that the Bruins are hedging their bets, anticipating that Hayes is maybe not going to take that next step. And so it's, you know, possibly you could have and if Heinen isn't ready to go, you could have Riley Nash playing up on your third line. And so why not bring in Mueller on a professional tryout and see if maybe there's something there. He's a former top 10 pick. Again, had a world of promise. Certainly looked like he was going to be something special when he was traded from Phoenix to Colorado around 2010. And then concussions just really derailed him. Last 3 years, he's not even been in North America. So he's a name that you can look at and get, you know, people who are real draftniks and remember him in 2006 as a Minnesota kid who played in the WHL out for the Everett Silvertips and really, you know, made guys like Zach Hamill look better than they were because he was just such an effective, an effective forward that drew a lot of attention. And so Zach Hamill was able to benefit from that, going up against lesser defenses and whatnot. Mueller has the tools to maybe do something, and because he's only 28, this is not a bad chance to take. It's not like he's a 38 has been retread who, you know, you just know the legs are failing him and all, but it'll be a real tall order for him to come in and establish himself enough to get up one of the 50, you know, max contracts the Bruins can have and do something. But I guess the way they look at it is they'll continue to add depth to the forward position. And if he plays well and carves a niche for himself, then that gives them more options to maybe trade someone else to stockpile assets in a bigger trade and give up more to acquire that elusive defenseman. I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud here, but I've got to think that's factoring into it. So that's kind of the deal with Mueller, another player certainly who got some time last year and was a bit of a cult favorite is Tyler Randall. He actually, you know, found his way into 27 Bruins games. He scored 6 goals and he had quite a shooting percentage. When you look at just, you know, he posted a 33.3% shooting percentage, which was absurd. The problem is he scored 6 goals, but he only took 18 total shots in 27 games. Look, he's a big, rugged, tough customer, and I give Randall all the credit in the world because he was a 6th-round pick in 2009, had known skating issues, and his skating hasn't gotten really all that better. It's improved, but he still has the heavy feet, and he struggles in up-tempo games when there's a lot of direction change and teams are going up and down the ice. But what he's always had is a slick set of mitts and a big, heavy, hard shot, and boy, you know, fans got a chance to see that. And yeah, again, you give him credit because he had so many opportunities to just be written off by this Boston Bruins team and, you know, be set aside and cut or traded or just not re-signed. And he stuck it out. He hung in there. And, you know, he's an NHL player. No one will ever take away from him the fact that he played in 27 games. He's certainly not a regular. He hasn't earned that. But there are worse guys you can play with on your fourth line than Tyler Randall, because he's going to come out and he's going to bang and he's going to, you know, potentially score some goals for you. And he's also going to fight, and he's a tough customer. I think his work ethic was always uneven, and that's what kind of maybe held him back. But he's really come along, and again, I have to give him full credit for finding a way to stick with the organization that drafted him 7 years after the fact, and get some games in when many players of that ilk, you know, where they're late picks and they do get signed, they're usually cut loose and sent packing somewhere else after their first contract. And he's gone through a couple of periods where he's been re-signed. So, you know, good for him. I wouldn't expect a whole lot more than you've seen, but, you know, whenever the Bruins need some toughness, he's a guy they can kind of carry on the roster and mix and match in there. Now, there's a name that I'm sure you've been waiting for, and that's Zach Sinishin. Certainly, arguably, with Charlie McAvoy, he's probably Boston's top prospect. Scored 45 goals a year ago for the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds, a year after getting 26. This guy's got size. I mean, we're talking about a 6'2", about 200-pounder, real good athlete. He just blows by defensemen in the open ice, usually will beat them wide with speed, has real slick hands, so he can score off the rush, or he can pick up rebounds and fire them home, roof shots from in tight. Just a real natural scorer and a good kid, works hard. I noticed it. I've only seen him on film. I've been told this, and so I watched it in my film study, and it really stood out. And that is, you know, like many young players, he doesn't have a fully well-rounded game. He's oftentimes you'll see him. He's kind of, if he's not part of a big scoring chance or the puck's in his own end, he's kind of waiting for someone to get him the puck so that he can be sprung on the rush. And my friend Dominic Tiano, one of the Three Amigos, we had a recent podcast, and he said, hey, that's what he was asked to do. Hey, look, totally fine with that. But I still don't believe that really helps a player. You know, I get, hey, he was told to do it. I respect that line of reasoning. But ultimately, that doesn't help Zach Sinishin be a better hockey player and put him any closer to the National Hockey League. So I think Sinishin is going to have to, you know, really kind of show the Bruins this year a little more dedication into his 200-foot game. I'm not saying he needs to be a Claude Binky and be all defensive, but there are just certain things he has to do. He's got to be heavier on the puck, and he's got to be willing to maybe go in and dig it out and go get it himself. And I thought too often, you know, he was just a little on the one-dimensional side, like he was letting someone else do the grunt work, and then, you know, so that he could go and take off, waiting for that next scoring chance. So because of that, I just don't think that this is a player we're going to see make the big club this year, because he either has to make the team make the NHL roster out of camp, or he has to go back to junior. The Bruins do not have an option to send him to Providence. So I think there's a very good chance he'll go back to junior, especially since he had the mono in the summer, which prevented him from doing the development camp, and then he just had the emergency appendectomy, so he's going to miss the rookie portion of camp, and we'll have to wait to see what happens to him, how much of the main camp he misses, if any, and what kind of shape he's in. So I would just kind of pencil him in, expect him to go back to junior, and it doesn't mean he sucks or it was a bad pick. It just means that he's not ready, and an extra year of development won't hurt him. Next year, he'll really have an opportunity to stick. Now, he's going to tell you he wants to come in and win a job. Hey, more power to him. And Zach, if you're listening to this podcast, kid, I just told you, gave you some feedback on what's lacking in your game. Whether you agree or not, there it is. It ain't just me. I've had other people within and outside the Boston Bruins organization point that out. So if you're serious about making the Bruins, think about that. Go in and get some pucks. Pay the price. You know, be a good three-zone player. And if you can go out there and rock it and force them to keep you, more power to you. Good luck with that. Going back to junior is not a terrible thing. And if nothing else, it sets you up to have a hellacious third year in the OHL, which we believe you're capable of doing. You certainly have the talent and the wherewithal. It's not a lack of desire or attitude, but it is something I think is notably missing in Zach Senyshyn's game as of right now. So a couple of other players to just kind of to mention over on the right side. Oscar Steen, talked a little bit about him with some NHL scouts at the Omaha tournament, and general consensus is he's a really gritty, energetic, hardworking guy who's an opportunistic scorer, kind of a, you know, your typical Bruin type of player who can really you know, just plays with a lot of passion, a lot of energy. I don't see a lot of high end potential there, but would love to be proven wrong by this guy. You know, he certainly got some ability, and he did go out and score a couple goals at the under-18s when I saw him, but I just don't see any real standout skills that scream to me that this 5'9" player is going to be able to establish himself as a top two-line player. And then when you start going to your bottom lines, I don't know that a 5'9" guy is really going to be all that effective for you on the third and fourth line. He's a better skater, at least. He's a better skater than Seth Griffith is. But not as dynamic offensively. So there's a bit of a trade-off. We'll have to see where it all leads. But Oscar Steen, you know, certainly one of these players where you can look at him and say perhaps you know, that he's got the potential to make the NHL one day, but it's not going to come easy for him, and he's a long shot. You have to remember he was a sixth-round pick. So if he makes it, great. If he doesn't, well, you know, I guess it wasn't meant to be. But so that's kind of it. I imagine there might be a couple of guys I'm leaving out, but at this stage, this podcast is approaching 45 minutes, and I think I've taken enough of your time, assuming you're still sitting here listening. So. Again, I want to thank everyone for, you know, for listening, for supporting the blog. I appreciate the traffic. Sorry about the hiatus there, but, you know, got to balance my enjoyment of breaking down the NHL with my requirement, to go out and scout amateur games, for Redline Report and keep an eye on the future of the NHL. I had a great weekend in Omaha. It's a great city, with a terrific rink. And if you've never been out there or had a chance to catch the Omaha Lancers play, I recommend it. It's a good time. So for the Scouting Post, this is Kirk Ludeke. Be sure to keep checking in on the blog this week. Like I said, we're going to excuse me, a little tongue-tied there. Going to continue to crank out the position-by-position series. We're going to go into the left wings next. Have a lot to talk about there. And then over to the goaltenders, and then we'll wrap up with the defensemen. So, again, thank you for your attention. Thank you for your support. You can follow me on Twitter at K Ludeke, L-U-E-D-E-K-E 2-9. Thanks for the feedback. And if there's something I'm not doing that you'd like We'll try to get there. And to all of those who have been talking about iTunes and SoundCloud, I will get there. Again, understand it's not my full-time gig. I have other things going on, so I don't have the time necessarily to dedicate to doing this, but I will try to get these podcasts downloadable so you can listen to them on the car, on your commutes, on the train, or what have you. For the Scouting Post, this is Kirk Ludeke, and ciao.